You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science this week, we're joined by our expert, Dr. Kushal McGovern.
Kia ora.
Thanks for being here. What have we got in the world of science today?
Some really cool stories. Poison frogs.
Love them.
Neurons not really acting like we expected in songbirds. And yes, some personalized medicine for maybe the future. Not today, but some pretty cool advances there.
Hey, an advancement in medicine is always exciting.
Yeah. So we'll start off with poisonous frogs.
I love poisonous frogs. What have we got?
So yeah, basically, if you're ever walking around in the forest of Central and Southern America and you see this beautiful, tiny but really beautiful frog that's either red or bright green or bright blue and that sort of thing, don't pick it up. It's likely to be poisonous. And how they basically release these toxic chemicals through their skin. So it's an evolved mechanism of fending off predators and such. Mm. Now, these toxins belong to a family of chemicals called alkaloids. And how these frogs are able to do this is they actually, it's derived from their diet. So they have to eat ants, mites, millipedes, beetles to basically absorb these compounds and then store them. So this process is called sequestration. And they can also actually modify the alkaloids once they have ingested them to make them more toxic. And so this study was really about kind of investigating more about how did this evolve? Was it gradual over time, or was there suddenly these frogs that could do this and they bred and so they evolved to have this trait? Because if you think about the evolutionary path that it took these frogs to do this, they needed to first develop a resistance to the toxin, right? If you go eat the ants and the millipedes and they kill you, it's not survival of the fittest. Then you also need to develop a mechanism to transport those toxins from your digestive tract to your skin without actually metabolizing it, so without making it like detoxifying it kind of thing. And so there'd been two recent findings around these frogs where closely related groups of frogs, which we previously thought couldn't actually sequester these alkaloids, they actually did have low levels in their skin, so they had some capacity to do this. And then they also found that with these poisonous frogs, they actually were modifying the alkaloids much more than they thought. Like there was a vast array of these different types of alkaloids, like a wider range than they actually thought. And so this is kind of pointing towards this idea that it's gradual, and that's kind of what you would maybe instinctively think, that it's a gradual process. But they wanted to do some experiments and just investigate this a bit more. So if you imagine frogs in the forest or in the, you know, out in the wild, they're going to be pretty hard to observe over time, particularly when you're wanting to see how much they eat and what they're eating and this sort of thing. So they did what was sensible in this case, and they went to the lab. They collected some frogs to do the experiments in the lab where they could really control their diet. So they had several different species of these poisonous frogs, and then they had a close relative species and then a distant relative species. I would love to know what the health and safety is around trying to do these experiments. Like, what sort of gloves are you wearing to not make yourself sick over time?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what they did was they basically had two experiments where they were feeding different alkaloids to see how the frogs handled it in different amounts of it. So in the first experiment, they would use basically little droppers to feed them. So they could really precisely know how much they had given the frogs, how much the frogs had ingested. And in the second experiment, they basically sprinkled some powder onto their food, which was fruit flies, because that's more akin to what you'd see in the wild, right, than the eating that in. And then basically they tested the skin and the organs of the frogs afterwards to see what type of alkaloids were there and how much. And what they found was it was actually from being not poisonous at all to a little bit toxic to kind of medium levels to high, there was a continuum in how much they actually expressed the alkaloids on their skin. And that they also found that there was, again, that this modification process was really unique to the ones that were sequestering well and stuff. And so it's basically further evidence for the fact that this was a gradual change, that small steps needed to happen in this evolutionary process to get to this point. And obviously, as all good science goes, the more questions. So Now they want to basically look at what are the molecular sort of paths that are occurring within the frogs that basically take in these alkaloids and modify it and store it. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, going into this, I had no idea that poison frogs had to eat things.
No, that's totally their, if they had a alkaloid-free diet, they wouldn't be so poisonous.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And plus with the evolving to then have the colour as well, to be like, hey, I've eaten this.
Yeah, no, it's really, you know, as soon as you see nice brightly coloured animals in the wild, don't touch them. Stay clear. It really is the warning system, hey.
Yeah.
Admittedly, there are some animals that have evolved to have those colours to mimic other things that are poisonous now, but
it's a beautiful world.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of the beautiful world, what do we have next?
So the next one is about zebra finch, which are these really cute little birds that are native to Australia. And they're songbirds. And they're really well known for their ability to pick up new songs. Like, they're fast learners.
Mm.
And so they've actually been used a lot in animal studies now to study the brain and how it imprints new skills or its capacity to learn new sounds. So they're kind of a nice study animal. And what this study has done is they've basically studied their brains in like really fine detail. So they've used these techniques of electron microscopy, which gives you very high resolution images, to basically study the brain cells, so the neurons, particularly in reference to this process called neurogenesis. So neurogenesis is just a description of how neurons are birthed, migrate, and mature. And so in humans, when we're born, we have about as many neurons as we're ever going to have. Like, through life, we actually lose some. Mm. And this is kind of, mammals are all like this, basically. But reptiles and birds can actually grow new neurons during their life. And so this neurogenesis process, if you can grow these new neurons, maybe this is actually good for preventing against neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's and stuff. Like, that maybe is why humans are prone to getting those sort of things, because we can't repair. Because you can, one of the descriptions I saw was like, basically, we're operating with a brain that's version 1.0. You know, it does, those cells never replace. Whereas our other organs, the cells replace and stuff. And so what they're interested in, these zebra finches, is this process of basically. And so what they, the hypothesis, or what they thought would happen, is as these new neurons form, and they're basically forming connections to other neurons, so you build up these networks, and that's how information gets processed and stuff, that they would take kind of a polite path. You know, they would move around the things that are already there, these brain structures, because you don't want to damage them, right? Because, you know, they're there for a purpose. You've got communication of these other neurons. That's not what they saw. The new neurons were just like blasting through. They called it cell tunneling. They were basically squishing and shoving everything out of the way to form these new paths. And they were like, oh, that was a surprise.
Doesn't sound particularly pleasant.
No, exactly, right? And so while this maybe helps these zebra finch learn new things very quickly, and that's why they can pick up these new songs, maybe there is actually a cost that you lose memories or existing knowledge because these cells get damaged. And so they obviously don't know that yet. Like, they've just observed that this process happens in a way we didn't expect. But out of this study, they now have two hypotheses that are untested and they've just put out there for groups to now consider, where maybe in humans we don't have a lot of this neurogenesis where we make these new neurons because it's actually protecting our memories. Like, it's a protection mechanism for our brain. So we just strengthen connections rather than forming completely new cells to form completely new connections. But the other thing that's perhaps more exciting in some ways is that with this tunneling they observed of these neurons that they just kind of blasted through wherever they wanted, they weren't following what were called glial scaffolds. So glial scaffolds are basically structures in the brain that are like the highway for these cells to travel along. And so when we're in the womb and our brain's developing, there's a lot of these glial scaffolds. But as soon as we're born, we kind of basically lose them. And so this has been one of the challenges of neurogenesis in adult brains, to you know, if we're looking at trying to develop methods to reverse Alzheimer's and such, because we're like, well, what are we going to do? We don't have these glial scaffolds, so how can we form new neurons that form the right connections? And this study is basically showing that maybe we don't need to. So these stem cell therapies and stuff that people are looking at, maybe this is something they should be looking at and considering more. And so, yeah, I think it'll be watch this space sort of thing.
Hell yeah. Love. It's such a always so fun when you find out that just like some bard has, you know, an untold potential, I guess.
Yeah, right? Like, and that's that observing this animal behavior that is doing something that where you're like, it's kind of quite phenomenal that they can like learn new sounds or learn new songs really quickly, and then how does that actually happen, and then how can it actually relate to us and improve medicine? Like, who links zebra finch brains with human brains in terms of developing therapies for neurodegenerative diseases?
But hey, we got here with it, so yeah, awesome. Yeah. And I mean, another great link, brains.
Yes, so we're sticking to the brain. And this article is just about a group that's perhaps come up with a new way of making neural interfaces. And so neural interfaces are basically these tiny sensors that you put on the brain to track biophysical chemical signals. So, yeah, it's basically sensing signals in the brain. You use it. They get used to monitor and, in some cases, treat neurodegenerative diseases. But currently, they're made in a way that's one size fits all. So they're quite stiff. You basically, it fits or it doesn't kind of thing. They make it work. But you can imagine that brains are quite complex.
Yeah, not exactly a one size.
Exactly, right? They're each quite unique. So if you think about any sort of picture you've seen in the brain and it's got all those folds and stuff. So the major folds tend to be reasonably common across everyone or all humans, but the small folds that you get are quite unique. So, you know, like we often use the analogy of a fingerprint being unique to each individual. The folds of your brain are the same. And we basically have those folds in our brain because it allows cells to communicate at higher speeds because cells get put closer together and such. And one thing that I was really surprised by, if you take the outer layer of your brain and you stretch it out so it's not all folded up and stuff, it's 2,000 square centimetres.
Oh.
That's a lot of surface area in your head. So needless to say, one size fits all is kind of not really great. So this study was like, how can we make this better? So they took MRIs of 21 different people's brains and generated just digital three-dimensional models, and then used those to basically shape these neural interfaces to sit on the brain a lot better. And then they've printed both. So printed the brain just to have a structure that they could test on, and then they printed these electrodes or these neural interfaces, actually using these hydrogels that can conduct electrical signals. What was also really cool, though, is, well, the hydrogel is soft, so it's kind of more similar to the brain than what are a lot of the things we have now, which are quite stiff and hard. So it's not going to damage the brain tissue quite as much. They also use like a honeycomb structure to print the electrodes or these neural interfaces, because if you think about a honeycomb, it's quite strong, but it's quite flexible as well. And it also means you don't use as much material, so you kind of reduce the cost of it. And so then they tested it against their 3D printed stuff, and they fitted more precisely, as you might imagine. But of course, they printed it in the lab. Is this really that interesting? So then they went to the lab rats and implanted, they did the similar thing, right? They implanted their neural interface, left it for 28 days, and then basically they wanted to observe, was there any performance degradation over that time? And there wasn't really, so that's good. But they also needed to check that there's no inflammatory response, right? Because as soon as you put something into the body, your immune system goes, what's this?
And get
your
immune,
yeah, exactly, right? And they actually found that there wasn't so bad. There was maybe a little bit, but it wasn't bad with these because you are using those hydrogels and those biocompatible substances and stuff. So yeah,
awesome. Well, the human brain,
yeah,
it is an amazing thing. But yeah,
yeah.
Well, Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kushla, for joining us. Thank you, MOTAT, and thank you, Science. Aviation Conversations at MOTAT. Enjoy an evening in the Aviation Hall with a panel discussing exploring aerial mapping technology. 30th of April, book now at motat.nz.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.